Hello, everybody. Are you ready to get dramatic tonight? Play that music.
So in the theater of the absurd, are you the frowny face and I'm the smiley face, like the two theater masks?
I think that's perfection, honestly. Like, that's the perfect analogy.
Wait, or am I the frowny face?
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to episode 132 of Restitching the Tapestry. It's good to see all of you. And of course, per the usual, we're a little slap happy tonight. This has been the thing that's been getting me through my week, the realization that we will be doing this. So yay, we're finally doing it. Tonight, we're going to be talking about drama bonding part two, because we loved our conversation earlier this season so much that we had to continue the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. So before we get started, what have we been doing? How have we been? What have you been up to? All of that jazz.
Goodness. Well, I started my first week of multi-ethnic literature, and that went well. Just lots of stuff this week. I don't know. Just a very busy week of doing lots of things. How about your week?
My week's been kind of busy too, I'm not gonna lie. I've been obviously working on school stuff. Early in the week, Britt and I went to a concert. We went and we saw Senses Fail, which is one of my high school Holy Trinity bands that got me through, you know, just some good old emo rock. We got to, Britt surprised me with VIP tickets. So we actually got to meet the band and hang out with them. And we got to do arts and crafts with them. So that was fun. And the concert was a little intense. There were people who were super duper into crowd surfing, so I got kicked in the face a couple of times, but you know what? I didn't wear glasses that night for a reason.
Yeah, getting in the mosh pit.
Oh no, I definitely didn't get in the mosh pit, because I'm not designed for that. The people who are can do that to their heart's content, but I was at the front of the concert being like, you know, so.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, basically. That's how I went. Are you a mosh pit person?
I was when I was young, not anymore.
That's kind of my descriptor too. No, it's funny because the lead singer is very much like, very much dad energy. And he was just like, guys, this is a Monday night. We're not going to be here till 2 a.m. Trust me. And I'm like, thank you, because I don't want to be here until 2 a.m.
Oh, yeah. I went on a date and it only lasted till 8:30.
What? You went on a date that lasted till 8:30? I mean, were you glad that it only lasted until 8:30?
No. Well, yeah. I mean, that's a timer for things.
Right. Well, sometimes it's like a good sign. Like if somebody ends something early, like, okay, like what does that say? Like, do we need to skedaddle? Do we need to get out of here? Right. Kind of
so,
a thing.
So how long did your concert last until 8:30?
It lasts. Okay. So the concert started at 9:30, and okay. So like they had openers that started at 7:30. That went till 9:30. And then the actual like main part of the concert was from like 9:30 to 10:30-ish.
Oh, that's too late for me. I'm ready for pajamas by then.
I know. Oh, and we had to drive home too. Like, so we didn't get home till like 12:30. So like I was suffering.
That's past pajama time. That's like,
well,
cozied in.
the fact that the concert was on a Monday also kind of threw me for a loop, because like concerts aren't often on Mondays. Like they're normally like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday thing, maybe a Thursday, you know, but like for like just a Monday night, I was like, ooh. Ooh.
Isn't there a I feel like there's a song, like a techno song that's like, who goes out on Mondays?
There probably is. So beyond that, we've had some family stuff going on, and
didn't you have some stuff happen to you at your house today?
Oh yeah. Okay, so I think I mentioned to everyone a few months ago that over the summer, like, there were some kids who like screamed the derogatory gay F slur at my house. Well, fast forward to now, this morning I woke up and I was, you know, doing my usual tot around the yard to look at my plants. And I noticed that someone had tore the pride flag out of our flower bed, because we had like one of those like little, what are they called? Like an easel pride flag that like on like just like an easel sign thing. And they ripped it out of the ground and threw it into our yard. So they literally had to come onto our property, up to our flower bed, rip it out, and then throw it. So
that's ridiculous.
So I took a picture of it, and I was just like, no. So now we have security cameras installed, because I'm not going to be dealing with that. And I don't know, like, it, I don't feel unsafe where I am, because, like, where I live is, it's kind of, like, on the cusp. Like, sometimes it swings red, sometimes it swings blue, you know, liberal, conservative, etc. But, like, the area, the immediate area that I live in, like, there's a lot of, like, pride stuff that's, like, still up. Like, a lot of, like, allies with things up. So, like, it doesn't seem like an area that would have people behaving that way. However,
it's just, like, it's just, you like, can't, mean teenagers not, like, appreciating private property. Like,
right. Yeah, like, I don't, like, someone could have a sign that, you know, that I might not, like, feel comfortable with. I'm not going to go up into their property and remove it, like, at all, like, because that's not acceptable. Everybody has that free right to display whatever they want. But it also, like, the fact that they specifically chose a pride thing to target is just obviously the epitome of homophobia. Like, there's no mincing words on that. It's actual flat out homophobia. So I posted it on social media and a lot of people were responding, and like, it's just like being like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And I'm just like, we are living in a reality where we've had several years of people justifying hate, people in power justifying hate, and people following those leaders also kind of justifying that hate too. So it's like, it begs the question of, like, are people really aware of, like, how things actually are, right? Jackie's here. Jackie said, maybe kids getting off the bus. It could be. We do live on a street where there are a lot of kids that walk home. So being that we've had kids shout at us, those same kids could have been the kids who ripped out our flag. I don't know. But now that we have, like, those cameras that we'll be able, like, it's like a motion sensor camera. So it'll like record if people are in our yard, you know, engaging in shenanigans. So.
Yeah. Cause I used to walk down in my neighborhood down by like past the high school and stuff. And there used to be a guy who had a pride flag up there. And like one day I saw that his pride flag had been ripped down. And I was really concerned because, like, usually when you see, like, a pride flag on the ground, like, that's really concerning, especially, like, so, you know, I went back there and I was like, are you okay? Like, because, you know, like, that to me says that, like, something's wrong, like, that anything could be, especially in this day and age, like, you never know, just, like, because it could be, like, analogous to, like, something even more nefarious, especially, like, because it could just be like defamation, but like, or like, you know, somebody like doing, you know,
yeah,
being a little creep, but it could be like anything else. It could be like a sign of something more dangerous, you know.
Absolutely. So, and that's why we opted for like the security cameras, because I was like, you know, I don't think anything is a big deal, but like, you can't you gotta be sure, you know. And I think that that like kind of just provides like a little extra security that makes me feel comfortable at least. So, and I know that it makes Britt feel comfortable too. So,
yeah.
Current event snapshot. What's going on in the world?
So there's a spending bill, and Republicans don't like their own spending bill, so they're blocking their own spending bill for some reason. I don't know why. Oh. But I was just looking at current event, and I'm like, I guess they don't. I don't understand.
Maybe they weren't satisfied with the language or something. We're getting very close to like another shutdown, aren't we?
I don't know. I just saw Republicans block on spending bill, and I was like, what? Okay. Oh. So, I had sent you something about the Trump case. And I was talking about the legal defense that Trump is making as far as, cause the thing about it is that, Trump has all these indictments against him, that are trying to block him from, running for president again. And we were talking about what the language of the defense is using. And so what was it that they were saying? It was something like he's not actually like an officer of the something about that.
It was kind of like a very peculiar misinterpretation of the amendment, wasn't it? Like regarding executive privilege and stuff like that.
Yeah, that he's not actually like a presiding officer or something. And it's like if the president isn't actually like an acting officer, then what are we here for?
Right. I also saw current events wise that I think I saw a few articles about the fact that the WGA and SAG-AFTRA are very close to reaching a settlement with production companies.
Oh, good.
With regard to the current writer/actor strike going on, that's promising. Okay. So obviously
what are they going to do with AI?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything about the details yet, but like that obviously is, I'm hoping probably one of the big things they're going to address.
Yeah.
Well, like obviously, like a lot of it has to do with like personal ownership of one's image and content. So,
right.
Like obviously, if my theory is that if they are going to use AI in any way inspired by someone else's produced content or whatever, that they're gonna have to like compensate that person or like continue to compensate that person whose image or content's being used.
I think by the AI. Have to be able to use re-upload AI for reinterpretation. I don't know how they're going to be able to control it, though.
Yeah, that's going to be something that I think they're going to really have to. There's going to be some fancy footwork, some navigation with that, because I think that's going to be some difficulty, you know. There's this tropical storm on the northeast. I have not read about that yet. Is there another hurricane coming?
There's a tropical storm that's going to hit the east coast. I think it's in the southeast or like northeast. It should be over the weekend. I just saw a news report about that.
Oh my goodness. Well, with the ocean temperatures and everything like that, I'm not surprised. I just hope that everyone will be okay. We finally have had a lull of weather in our region where there's been no rain. So considering we've had an astronomical amount of rain over the past few months, like it's kind of nice to have a little bit of a lull.
I'm just saying, like, I should just repost my prediction for this year. I talked about it being very rainy this year.
You did. You actually predicted a lot of different aspects with regard to the weather. And current events too, right? If memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the deep fake to come out of the president.
Yeah. Are we ready for a mission statement?
Totally ready.
Is it my turn tonight?
Yes, and I actually have it posted for you in the notes.
Thank you. We live in a dynamic society where social media shapes us by creating greater opportunities for connection. It has led to a developing understanding of the adversity many marginalized communities face, the powers causing the adversity, and those who act as bystanders as atrocities take place in real time. Our goal with this show is to make connections and have challenging conversations about social topics, current events, pop culture, and art. Together, let's weave the threads of understanding with what privilege we have in order to learn, educate, and create in a world that's growing. So, All right, so drama bonding part two. What did we talk about last time? So last time, we kind of talked about how we kind of like bond over like reality TV and like the, just like the non-personally connected drama that like reality TV brings us, and how it's kind of like fulfilling to see other people experiencing drama, but us not being directly involved with it, if that makes sense.
I have to give a disclaimer that most of my examples tonight, I have lifted from my conversation that I had with my sister tonight, because I watched a lot of reality TV with my family growing up, and I couldn't remember a lot of specific examples. So my sister kind of primed me for, so this is my works cited page of the essay I'm doing tonight. My sister is my sister Jessica. Thank you, Jessica, for
thank you, Jessica.
Thank you for giving me all of my specific examples. She helped me out immensely tonight.
Jessica's here in spirit as a guest, basically, and I love it. So, where should we begin? I think tonight we wanted to kind of like think of the angle of representation, right? When it comes to like reality TV.
Yeah. So basically I was talking with my sister about queer identity in reality TV. And we were talking about a lot of shows growing up where when reality TV goes too far and pushes the envelope. So like, because there are a lot of shows in which reality TV tried to always push that envelope of most shocking and doing like these really shocking things to get people to talk around like the water cooler or be like, you know, chat on the internet and forums and like, I can't believe this thing happened. I can't believe they did this thing. But sometimes they would use like things of like queer identity or like, you know, like Black identity or like marginalized identities as a way of like trying to shock people. And so one of the things that she talked about specifically, and I talked about this in the last episode that we did of drama bonding, that one of the most iconic things that I can remember is when in Real World Seattle, because that's like one of the first reality TV series that I watched was reality or Real World Seattle was when Steven slapped Irene, and I couldn't remember why he slapped her. I just remember that he slapped her and he almost got kicked off the show for it. Like they made a huge, like it was like several episodes, like over like them deciding whether or not to kick him off the show. And they had like, they had like the other cast members of the show like got together and they had like a whole meeting about it. But my sister told me why they had why he slapped her, and it was because she had outed him as a gay man.
Ooh, and in the 90s nonetheless too, like that obviously was a time that was very dangerous. I mean, think of Matthew Shepard, right? Like that atrocity happened in the late 90s too. Right. So that was definitely at the forefront of a lot of people's minds, especially people in the LGBTQ plus community.
Like my sister recounted the whole scene over again to me. She said that Irene came to him because Irene was leaving the show because she had gotten Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. And so she was very sick and she wasn't feeling well. But her and Steven had a very tense relationship. And so they were fighting a lot and they weren't getting along. And so Irene said to him, we could never, because he made a joke about them getting married or something. because they, or something that they actually like an old married couple or something along those lines. And Irene said to him, "We could never get married because you're gay in front of everybody." Ooh. And so he's like, and so she goes into the car to leave. And so she was looking for this like stuffed bear of hers that like gave her comfort or something. Mm-hmm. And so he grabbed this bear that she had and he threw it into the pier, into the water. And then he came to her car and he tapped on the car to stop it. And he slapped her. And then the car took off.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Oh my goodness. Well, again, like in the 90s, like, I mean, thinking about representation, right? Like, especially in reality TV in the 90s, like reality TV at that juncture, wasn't it like kind of like in its infancy? Like it mm-hmm. like was a thing, but it wasn't like as huge as like the late 2000s. But like even having the representation or the presence of someone LGBTQ+ in that space probably was absolutely monumental despite like the circumstances.
Well, they did have a little bit of representation in the real world before, because they had a real world person who did have, who was gay, who was in an earlier season of the real world, who was Pedro in San Francisco, who had mm-hmm. AIDS. They had him as a person on the show. So they did, it's not that they didn't have gay characters before. But the fact of the matter is that it wasn't that they had specifically had him on to be a gay person. It was that he had been outed, and mm-hmm. it was sort of like that betrayal of him, you know, having his queer identity revealed as right. sort of a shocker. It was sort of like a twist of, you know, you are, this person is gay. And so it was the stacked on identity of him being a black man, being outed by a white woman, the betrayal of a white woman betraying a black man. It seemed very, you know, it's very iconic to me. It has very stacked layers of this whiteness betraying blackness, woman betraying gay man. That dynamic of they were supposed to be friends and then they were betrayed in this space that they were supposed to share. And it was supposed to be a safe space for both of them. And she betrayed him as she was leaving. It was sort of like burning down the house, and it was supposed to be this very interesting dynamic.
That does sound super interesting. So one of the next questions that we wanted to explore was, and this happens a lot too in reality TV, what happens when reality TV gives you the villain edit and ruins your life outside of the show?
Oh my goodness. Ooh. When you think about it, like how many shows have given characters the villain? I can't think of any specific example. Like who?
I can think of examples from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, really?
There was a queen named Fifi O'Hara in season 4 of Drag Race. They now go by Jeremy, which I believe is their like birth name. But they've quit drag altogether. But it's widely debated whether or not they were given the villain edit or if like they were actually genuinely that way, because the same person was brought back for All Stars to kind of like have a moment of redemption, and it kind of spiraled into the same thing. But like that dynamic kind of shifted them into not doing drag anymore altogether. Obviously, because like when something like that happens, like the fan lashback is going to be really significant, right? So I do think that the villain edit thing is definitely real. But
you see, I think it can vary. Hell's Kitchen too, like they'll give people the villain edit on Hell's Kitchen a lot. Where they'll
or Kitchen Nightmares, yeah.
They'll just give people like that villain, like it doesn't even necessarily be, or like The Bachelor, you'll see that on The Bachelor a lot too, where they'll just like pick one person on the show who's just like the bad person, just like the bad boy, the bad girl. And just like everybody like picks on that one person.
You know, there's some people who lean into it though too. Like some people want to be the villain, right? Like some people are just like
a lot on like Survivor. You see that like there's that one person who's like, I'm gonna be the jerk this season, and like I feel like they get paid extra to be like, if you play this up, we'll give you a bonus or something. Yeah,
just an FYI, here's more money, but you will be harassed endlessly now. Yeah, that's happened also throughout a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race. That's like the only like longevity related reality show that I've really been committed to over the past few years. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like, okay, so I've been addicted to 90 Day Fiancé. I don't know if you've ever watched 90 Day Fiancé.
A little bit, but not much, because it's some of those people on 90 Day Fiancé are just god awful.
Oh, I know. Well, and some of them definitely play into that villain edit recurrence, right? Yeah. Where like they like in the relationship, they are totally okay being the problematic and terrible person in the relationship. And they really don't care what anybody thinks. That's just what they want, right?
Yeah.
And I've been going through and watching 90 Day Fiancé being like, what is going on? Like how, what does it take for a person to go on television and behave this way? I mean, is it the...
Some of it is scripting and editing, though. Like, we can definitely agree that, like, reality TV is scripted, and they have, like, a specific narrative of what they want to say during the season, of, like, they have definitely a whole plot line of what they want to say, and they will take, like, your words, and they will, like, mix them around to say what they want to say during the season.
Or, like, alter the context slightly, or, you know, no, that's definitely true, and I think that... Like, they even will go as far as, like, developing arcs or, like villain arcs, redemption arcs, and stuff like that. So, I honestly think that that's where, as much as I love RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, like, I think that All-Stars is that place where, like, they are given the opportunity to just continue developing these characters of sorts, right? But yeah, like
that's just the weird part about reality TV, isn't it? Like we get so lost in these like storylines, and it's supposed to be like real. Like these are real people with real lives and real situations, but it's a farce. Like these are fantasies.
So I guess that begs the question. I don't know if we have this on our list of questions, but why do we love reality TV so much then? Like if we are aware of how manufactured it is for entertainment reasons, why do we still go back to it? Why?
I think that it's like, there's a sense of like comfort in, you know, because it's like, sometimes it has like a feel good message, but sometimes it also is like, there's a sense of like feeling, it's like riding like a roller coaster or like a thrill ride. It's like that, because when there's like a sense of like conflict and stuff, it's like safe conflict. It's like watching a horror movie or like watching or like riding a roller coaster. It's like knowing that there's a sense of like all of this conflict, but it's not dangerous because it's not affecting your life in any meaningful way.
Right. I think, you know, that's absolutely correct. I think also that we're always comparing that's why we love fiction so much too, because we're always like envisioning like different ways life could be, like different scenario situations, right? I think reality TV does that for us in a very similar way. Because obviously when we watch reality TV, like, these are real people as opposed to fictional characters. So maybe that brings us closer to resonating with an experience or looking at someone else's experience and be like, ooh, this validates me. I'm not this person, nor would I make this decision, nor would I go through this experience, right? I mean, I feel that way all the time watching 90 Day Fiancé, being like, these people have been talking for 2 weeks. They just got married. And now they're moving over to this other country to live with this person and their family who they've never met before. And it's like, what? What?
It's kind of, it's like the toxicity of like watching Hoarders and then cleaning your house, or like watching 600 Pound Life and then like exercising, or like, you know,
or eating.
You know what I mean? It's,
which I've done before with friends, unfortunately.
We're like, you know, because it's like, I'm not that bad, or like, I'm not that person, or that, like, that's not me. At least I'm not that bad. Or like, at least I'm not that type of person. Or right. Like, you know, it's that sense of feeling superior or like better in some way, or like, feeling as though that drama is outside of yourself, or like, you know what I mean?
It's like, it's, my life isn't that bad because I'm watching these other people like
tear each other apart.
Right. No. And it's something, it's interesting because periodically, like, I'll also watch reality TV and feel like this immense well of shame too, because when, like, the truth is, like, the purpose of reality TV is to make people and their lives and their experiences a spectacle, you know, regardless of like the manufactured nature of everything. And I, like, sometimes I feel really bad. I'm like, I am kind of just adding to the spectacle by like simply watching it, right?
Interesting.
Yeah. And like, I especially feel that way, like, if I watch like My 600 Pound Life or something like that, it's like I'm like simply adding to the spectacle by watching it. And yeah, so like, I think there's a lot to unpack with that. Like, I think if we can safely go into reality TV and ask those questions, I think we're fine. But like, obviously, like, there are people who will literally watch reality TV and then go online and harass those people who are in said reality TV show. Like, yeah. I think that takes it to a very toxic level of, you know, playing on those people who've been made a spectacle, or, you know, preying on those people who've been made a spectacle.
Like 500 pound sisters, like people, those.
Oh,
those
1,000 girls, pound sisters. Yeah.
Those girls get harassed it a lot online.
And I've watched that show too. Like, ultimately, like, I feel like they mean well, like they seem like really, really nice people. And I can't imagine what it's probably been like having like the last 4 years of their lives be like documented to this extent. Right.
You know who gets harassed a lot online after it was like Dance Moms? Honey Boo Boo gets harassed a lot online. And it's like, she's just trying to live her life. I mean, her life was a spectacle completely growing up, and her whole family became just this spectacle that just spun out of control. And it's like, you know, they were dysfunctional, but it's like people didn't give them any practical way to like better themselves. They just like rolled cameras and were like, do the thing. And then they like scripted how to make their lives even more dysfunctional growing up. And they didn't help them in any practical way to like better themselves.
Yeah. And honestly, you see that a lot with like, especially like, teen actors, like from like the 90s and early 2000s, like where they literally grew up and their life was made in a complete spectacle, right? I mean, when you think about it, Britney Spears was one of those people. Mm-hmm. If you were in a boy band throughout the 90s and the early 2000s, that absolutely happened to you. Your whole life was turned into a spectacle. Nick Carter from the Backstreet Boys, what was his younger brother's name? Aaron Carter,
yeah.
And Aaron Carter, I mean, recently died.
Yeah.
As well. And like throughout, I mean, obviously he had some points of being very problematic and everything like that, but like his whole life was made into a spectacle at every turn. I guess you can kind of like, I feel like there is like kind of like a bridge from this conversation to talking about like tabloids too.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, tabloids, if you think of like journalism, like tabloids
and like TMZ and stuff,
they're like reality TV journalism.
They kind of are, aren't they?
Yeah, like, because the whole purpose is to illustrate and inflate something that's happened to someone, and then like use a lot of exaggerated language, hyperbole, everything to kind of just draw a reaction
right
out of a reader, because like that obviously makes money, right? Like the whole shock value,
right?
Ooh. I guess at the end of the day, that's all.
I heard a rumor that TMZ or like these tabloid reporters don't usually show up around celebrities unless someone in PR has contacted them. That they usually don't show up unless like somebody has like
tipped them
off in some way. So, but I don't know how true that is, because like sometimes it seems like the celebrity doesn't want them there, but then sometimes it seems like, but I'm not sure how much of like how real it is, and like but sometimes it seems like they generally are getting harassed by the tabloid, but sometimes it seems like it's part of the circus of like trying to make it seem like they're being harassed, but it's all a part of like they're trying to get the publicity, the back and forth of, you know, they're trying to create buzz about themselves. So like, oh, I hate these darn tabloids. You should really leave me alone type thing.
Right. No, I remember. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of Lady Gaga, and I've kind of analyzed this, like her journey with regard to this in the past.
Her biography was really interesting.
Oh, right.
She did
right. Netflix. Yeah. Like I loved that. Like Netflix, what was it called? Five by three or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody remembers this, but like way back in like 2008 and 2009, when she was just kind of like entering the scene, right, and getting really famous, like some tabloids circulated like this image of her, or like her outfit wasn't sitting correctly, or it was like a snapshot from like a moment where she was dancing where like her outfit bunched up. And that's when the rumors circulated that she, you know, had a penis, and that became like so central to her narrative that like reporters were harassing her. I will never forget. There was this interview with Anderson Cooper, of all people, where Anderson's like, "Do you have a penis?" And Gaga was like, "So what if I do? What's the big deal?" Like, you know, and like, I think at the beginning of her career, like that was like a pretty significant struggle. But then like gradually, I think sometimes like as artists grow, they become like, they know how to work the scene. Like they know how to use those moments or the tabloids to their advantage to kind of like redo their image, or to kind of like sew another narrative. And I know that Gaga has been very good at that over the years. So I think it's possible for artists to kind of like own their power back from like reality TV and tabloids. It just, they probably need to be seasoned and know how to do that. Right.
I was actually talking about how media represents like, different people in different aspects, and like some people get like the villain edit and some people get like this halo effect. Mm-hmm. So there was a tennis player who broke her racket after a game between an opponent, and she had lost, and she was like in the back room, like in the dressing room. Like she had broken her racket, she threw it away, and she was super pissed. And so everybody was like, you know, this shouldn't have been filmed. Like this is an invasion of privacy and stuff. And, you know, this is wrong to film this stuff. And it was because she was white that everybody was reacting that way. But nobody remembers that a few years earlier, people had gotten super upset that Serena Williams had done the same thing. Mm-hmm. She broke her racket, and everybody was up in arms about her breaking her racket. They had drawn cartoons about this hyper masculization, you know, that she was throwing this baby to Do you remember that cartoon?
We do remember that. And you know, the irony about all of that is that if a man did that, oh, it'd be fine. Like, nobody would care. Men are always throwing fits when it comes to, like, competition.
But the thing about it was, is that this white woman who broke her racket, it was like, oh, you know, it's fine. It's fine that...
Oh,
know,
yeah. Like, but it shows the misogyny and the racism of it all.
It was just like, it was, it, and so I was just like, you know, but it's that, you know, it, but it showed this woman as she was, this like, that she was allowed to keep her femininity, first of all, and it, she was allowed to hold her anger, second of all, that female rage is allowed to have, to, that female rage is only allowed when you're a white woman, but when you're a black woman, female rage is hyper masculinized, and that you become, that you're not allowed to have. And I was just, so it's interesting with reality as far as like the, and I just, that's just an aside. I was just having that thought. And
no, like, I think that's a good point. I mean, because we're going to be talking a little bit about like represent, like visibility and representation, and whether reality TV can promote that. But like, I think that that's just another extension of like, if you look at, you know, white, cis, hetero, like the whole like complex system of that promotes like misogyny and racism and stuff like that, it always is centered around like the silencing of black women. And I think that that's just yet another example of that, right? Like the moment, you know, an individual in that community expresses themselves, like these other people in these systems are always quick to be like, hush, 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 you're being too much, make yourself smaller, like reduce yourself in any means possible, which is very problematic, right?
Yeah, it only creates, like, it creates buzz, like everybody's talking when, like, you know, oh, isn't it a spectacle when a black woman starts getting angry, like, oh, isn't that shocking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's all done to just simply disempower, like, the atrocity, like, and to distract from the atrocity that took place, right?
And it's supposed to be, like, you're supposed to laugh at the black woman, you know, getting angry, and, like, that it's almost, like, you know, oh, isn't this entertainment?
Yeah, exactly. So can reality TV help promote visibility and representation? I think it can. So I'll give you an example. So there is a pretty famous series on Netflix called, that's like a dating series, kind of like Love is Blind, but it's called The Ultimatum. Mm-hmm. And they did an entire season featuring an LGBTQ plus cast, focusing largely on like lesbian relationships and trans and non-binary relationships. And so like monumental, like I think it was really interesting that we got an entire season of a love themed reality show based on that. There were some instances where like there were some problematic stereotypes that were perpetuated, etc. But like it was interesting because like it was just like really neat to see a reality TV show environment where people talked about like their coming out stories, what they've experienced. Like,
where can you watch that at?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Okay.
And of course, like a lot happens in it. A lot happens in it. And of course, at the end of the season, much like a lot of reality TV, there's like this tell-all, right? Like a reunion where they all get together. It's like, ooh.
I'll have to watch that.
Yeah. What else?
Does reality TV help boost a message and connect with an audience, or is it a prepackaged thing? We talked about this, that is pushing a clean-cut narrative that's digestible. I think that we kind of established that it does kind of push a narrative.
It does push a narrative. I really think it depends. I feel like reality TV now is able to push a narrative much more succinctly than it used to. I think it used to simply be for the digestibility factor. I mean, let's think Jersey Shore, for example.
Yeah.
Jersey Shore, as much as I love it, was not trying to push a narrative. It was just...
No, they were pushing a narrative. Wake up.
Oh, they were?
Wake up. Buy booze. Party.
Look good doing it.
Make sure you put your jimmies on.
Look good doing it, and everybody looks great in that off-colored sepia tone filter that they add throughout the whole series.
Also, Snooki.
Oh, I love her. So obviously, because I like, I very much enjoy RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, I feel like, especially over the past few years, well, like, I feel like Drag Race in general has been very instrumental at, like, bringing LGBTQ plus expression to the forefront of, you know, social conversation. And I think that being that drag has been attacked over the past year or a few years, like, it's definitely, like, if you watch recent seasons, they do create some very interesting commentaries about why drag is so important and why you should be able to express it. And likewise with Dragula, because we love Dragula, right?
I'm looking forward to Dragula, first of all. I'm definitely
season 5 is coming. I'm so excited. And Ari, if you've not watched Dragula Titans, you should.
I am signing up for a Shudder account as we speak.
Let me binge all of it. Oh, I cannot talk about Dragula enough. So, like, I think what I love about Dragula, and I know I'm kind of going off topic, but, like, Dragula, like, obviously it brings, similar to RuPaul's Drag Race, like, to the forefront, like, the importance of, like, drag and LGBTQ plus expression, right, through this art form. But it also, it illustrates how, like, art doesn't always have to be this beautiful spectacle that we look at. Like, art is diverse, right? Very much the way people are diverse.
But my sister reminded me of the thing that the Boulay brothers always say during each episode of Dragula, which is, we are not judging your drag because all drag is art and art is beautiful. We are judging the content of about how well you did in the challenge.
Like the context of, like, their parameters that they set. Yes.
Right.
No, and I think that's an important thing to note too, because they're not, like, coming at anybody for, like, who they are as people and what they've been doing. It's always about, like, their interpretation of that challenge, right?
And that's the difference between that and, like, say, RuPaul's Drag Race, which kind of judges their drag a little bit.
Yeah, it does. It does. I think it's gotten, like, if you watch the earlier seasons, it's, like, really bad with that. Like, more recent seasons, a little bit better with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see. Do you enjoy reality TV show game shows such as Bachelor and Bachelorette that uses things like romance to push a narrative? And how does that affect or play into queer identity?
I think that that's interesting when you have shows like The Bachelor and Bachelorette, because it's like, here is something that is an idea such as like a concept such as love, which is indefinable, and they quantify it with something as like a game show where it's sort of like you're competing against other people for somebody's affection and love and attention. And it's sort of like, no, I'm going to win her. And they're like tearing at each other like tigers. And they're doing it within a set time span period. And it seems almost like, first of all, love, a concept such as love, you can't rush. Like, you can't decide on those things. So it seems almost laughable to me that these relationships are long lasting or that they will have any sort of like staying power. They seem to me, I want to see the numbers on actual people who stay together through these shows.
So I think the interesting thing about that is that, because if we think about like what distinguishes the relationships that we develop in our lives versus what they cultivate, what we have more privacy than they have, right? Mm-hmm. Like they don't really have the luxury or access of privacy because they are constantly being filmed. like their successes are filmed, their challenges are filmed, their inclines, their declines, etc. So like, when are they able to have like a moment of enrichment where they're able to like build something with somebody without needing to think about whatever spectacle it is that they are putting on, right? I feel like there's probably a lot of pressure in that.
Well, and again, these shows push a prepackaged narrative. So again, the producers are probably telling the person who's making these decisions about who they're supposed to choose to give the rose to, or who they're supposed to choose each episode, you know, it would probably be best for the narrative if you chose this person or not. So how real is it, you know?
Absolutely. No, I think you make an excellent point. So how do reality TV game shows handle the delicate balance between different identities in the subjective process of elimination?
So I actually have thought about this. I've thought about this a lot because I used to watch like decorating shows. Like there was this one about like gift wrap decorating, and like I would watch like cake decorating shows, and I would, in the process of like elimination, I would count like how many Black people or like how many women or like how many gay people ended up in the final rounds of these shows. Or like you watch Survivor, you count how many Black people start on the show, or like how many minorities, how many women, how many, you count how many start the show, and then you count how many get eliminated each round.
Right.
And that's how well you know how much they care about
minority representation. Yeah.
About representation is how long they last each round. And if you watch the show long enough, like if a show, you know, has elimination rounds, like each episode, like they have certain people that start and then eliminations each. But if you start to notice a pattern that there aren't very many, say, Black people on a show, and then like they have maybe like one Black person in out of like four or five, and that Black person gets eliminated early in each episode.
Right.
It starts to kind of get you thinking
about. Yeah, it makes you wonder. It makes you wonder, right?
About the subjectivity of whether or not they, is it the content of what the Black person is creating, or is it just that they don't like Black people?
Yeah. No, that's you make an excellent point. I think that's an excellent question to ask too, because like, I mean, a lot of the different reality TV shows, like I've been able to see that, is Jess commenting? Is Jess here?
Oh, is that my sister Jess? It is.
Jess, hello. It's good to see you. So, Jess says, do you want to go for it? How can you truly be vulnerable with a person you are trying to date on TV when you know that your vulnerability is portrayed? Right. Like, I feel like there is a way that it, because of that level of transparency, like how can meaningful vulnerability even take place? Right. Jess says, 2 seasons ago on Survivor, they made a trans man quit because they refused to let him continue taking his Lexapro. Wow.
Hello.
Oh my goodness. This is so exciting. I think it's like, I mean, that's a valid thing to bring up too. And I think that we do have to think about like manufactured relationships. So like case in point, like I was watching, was it a season of the 90 Day Fiancé the other way? And there was like a couple that I super obsessed with, and they were only on for 2 seasons. So like I went and I did research, and I was like, well, they literally confessed to like the fact that most of their relationship throughout that second season was completely manufactured and not accurate at all. It was all done for a narrative, right? Wow.
That's ridiculous.
You can't take any mental health meds on Survivor? That's concerning. Like, that's really concerning.
I would not be able to survive on Survivor.
Obviously, I'm not super familiar with Survivor. Has, like, Survivor gotten, like, any, like, flack or lash back on that type of policy?
Well, like, and the fact of the matter is I just watched a video the other day about the higher number of people who are LGBTQ+ have a higher number of disabilities.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember you told me about that. So that immediately, like, puts up a lot of, like, walls for LGBTQ+ representation and involvement in general, mm-hmm. which is very concerning. It's very ableist too, right?
Extremely.
It completely omits entire groups of people based on that. I think it's definitely worth having more conversation over. And I think because reality TV is so easy to digest and how people want to go to reality TV for, like, that escape, like, I don't think that they're willing to ask those difficult questions of those who create reality TV about, like, that, you know, type of thing. We're clicking on it at the same time. I think in reality TV, they don't want you stable. They want, so, like, it's, yeah, they're using that as a means of creating a spectacle, which that's really problematic. Ooh, it's really problematic. Yeah, like, I feel like they're, like, how, if they've not gotten any flack for that, how is that possible? Like, I feel like that's...
Do they make you sign a waiver saying that you're not going to take your meds?
Like, that would be my next big question. Yeah.
Because I would not go on reality TV if they didn't allow me to take my meds.
Yeah, like, that you would immediately, you would be like, nope, done, checked out, not doing that.
Because I would not go on a reality TV show if they didn't allow me to take my medication.
Right.
Like, that's a big no-no for me.
So what reality TV shows are you looking forward to?
So I'm going to watch Dragula. I'm going to try and look at this ultimatum, I think, that I'm going to try, because I think that representation is good. I don't know. I don't watch a lot of TV. So I think that this is the only two. Because I think that I want to watch Dragula because you're watching it and it'll be something to talk about with you.
I know. I'm excited. So I'm looking forward to Dragula season 5. I'm looking forward to... I love Drag Race UK because I love humor. Like, I love dry British wit a lot.
Every so often I get it in me that I want to watch Solitary again, that old 2000 show.
I've not thought of that in a long time.
I know, I watch it every so often because it's my comfort show.
I love that. I'm finishing up 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way, and then I'm going to switch to watching 90 Day Fiancé. There's, like, so many versions of 90 Day Fiancé. What is the other one? 90 Day Fiancé Last Resort, I think that's what it is. Where, like, the stars are literally put on a resort and they have, like, couples counseling.
I don't know. I might fall down the hole and catch up with Amber Lynn Reed again and catch up with Foodie Beauty. I heard Foodie Beauty went to Thailand and I was like, she's such a dumpster fire. I don't even know what's going on with her recently. I have not caught up with her recently.
Think that we have forgotten to talk about, like, reality YouTubers. Like, I do enjoy, just as I do love Thousand Pound Sisters. You know, it's interesting. Like, I feel like with Thousand Pound Sisters, like, I really care about them as people too. Like, I want them to be doing okay. Like, I want them to be flourishing, living their lives.
Tammy lost weight.
I saw that. Like, she got the surgery.
Yep.
Like, I will admit, like, that's one of my comfort shows as well. Mm-hmm. I used to love, this is going to be ridiculous of me to admit to, but I think I may have mentioned this the last drama bonding episode, but I used to really love, like, the the vehicle repossession shows.
Oh, like the lizard.
Lizard Lick Towing, South Beach Tow, Operation Repo. Oh my gosh, those were so, and you know, most of those were like scripted, like absolutely scripted. So funny though. Oh, another one new one I've been getting into, Below Deck. Have you ever watched that?
No.
It's like, well, there's like a few different like versions of the show. But it's like basically like these workers who work on like these charter boats or sailing yachts and stuff like that. They will like document like their seasons where they like will charter guests and like they document like the stress behind like the management of it, the preparation for it. It is a mess.
Really?
And the one that I just watched actually had some LGBTQ plus representation. So I was just like, woo.
I want to see a reality version of Star Trek.
Oh my God, right?
Like a reality episode of Star Trek where they like do camera crews on Starship Enterprise.
They just did a musical episode. So what's to hold them back from that, right?
Absolutely.
The musical episode was wonderful. I absolutely loved it. Of course, not everybody was a fan of it. Like some people were like, ew. Like a musical. Oh,
they did a reality season of American Horror Story. That was a great one. Roanoke. They did. That was my favorite season. That was one of my favorite seasons of Roanoke.
Wasn't that the one where Gaga was like the forest witch?
No, that was, she was in Hotel. She was in Hotel.
I think she starred in another season though. She starred in the second season of, but it was like a small role.
I don't know if she was in Roanoke. I don't think.
I'm fairly sure she was the forest. I'd have to look it up, though. Star Trek meets The Office. I would love that. Gaga was in Roanoke. I remember it was like a smaller role, though, because she was busy doing stuff. So, I love reality TV. Final thoughts celebrating reality TV.
Oh my goodness. I don't even know. Goodness. The thing about reality TV is that you know when the cameras are rolling that when the producers start whispering, something is going to go down.
Oh, absolutely. Or when like the producers have to like interject in like an interview or conversation, like you know something's happened.
Or you know when it's a good episode when the producers have to put like a disclaimer at the front of the episode.
Oh no, not a disclaimer.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Like warning, this episode contains, you know it's gonna,
and
be.
It's like the dramatic music, you know.
Oh god.
Okay, before we need to talk about dramatic music for a second. So periodically I will watch, for example, My 600 Pound Life, and without like every episode starts with like them documenting the person's life, but it's like this really sad dramatic piano music. And it's just like, what are you doing with this music? Stop. Stop. Stop.
Well, this is you've just watched the reality of us talking about reality TV shows. Now go and live real life.
Right. Are we following a storyline? Are we manufacturing? Who knows? We'll never know. Maybe next episode we'll have a disclaimer and some dramatic music at the beginning. Oh, we kind of do already. All right, everyone. We love you so much. Thank you for tuning in for another episode. And we hope that you have a good rest of your night. Bye.